So my name is Mark. I've been living with HIV for 25 years on the 15th of November this year. And I just want to tell you a little bit about my story. It started back in 1998. Myself and Colin, my partner, were on holiday in Canada. And while we were up in small towns up in the mountains, Colin started to feel quite unwell. He was having stomach problems and lots of issues with his stomach. He went to the local GP there, and because Colin in the past had had stomach ulcers, the GP thought that's what the problem might be. And I think it probably helped him to diagnose that, because Colin was talking about kind of previous history around that as well. So he gave him some treatment to help with the discomfort, and he was advised to see a GP when he got back to the UK. We had a great holiday. Colin was really healthy apart from the problems with his stomach, and when he came back to the UK, he did go straight to the GP. And again, because of the discussion and probably the way that discussion went, the GP prescribed him some treatments again for any kind of symptoms for stomach ulcers. And over a period of a few weeks, things didn't improve. Things were getting worse as far as his symptoms were concerned. But Colin was more than happy because he was off work and he was just able to chill out and do what he wanted to do. Computers were quite new on the scene, so he was really becoming kind of quite good with working computers and things like that. One of the things he said, and I've still got the message that he sent to our friend in Canada, was that he was having a lovely time and he was quite happy because I was going out to work and he was able to stay at home and spend the money. And that was just Colin's humour. And I've still got some of those messages because they were sent by fax at the time, because we didn't really have email or anything like that. So it's quite nice to look at those sometimes. Anyway, he wasn't getting any better. And this went on for probably 6 weeks to 2 months. And eventually the GP referred him to the QE, where he probably went to the QE, it would probably have been kind of the end of May, beginning of June, and by that time was really quite unwell. They did lots of tests while he was there, and they actually found out after a week or so, once they got the results back, that it was his pancreas that was causing the problems. And by that stage, because it had gone undiagnosed for so long, it was very enlarged, and it was impacting on his kidneys. And because it was impacting on his kidneys, they were discussing the options of dialysis, because his kidneys just weren't working very well at all by that time. And because he was deemed in a high-risk group for HIV, they suggested a HIV test, basically because dialysis machines come in contact with blood, and they just wanted to make sure that they had kind of the full history of what was going on before they did anything. I don't think it would have stopped him having dialysis. I just think they wanted a fuller picture of what was happening. So he had a HIV test. It's not something that we'd ever discussed having. We'd been together for 8 years, so it wasn't a general discussion that we would usually have, because we both thought that we were okay. And after a week or so, he got the results back, and actually the results came back negative. But they said because he was having huge complications with his pancreas and with his kidneys, they wanted to do a confirmatory test. And they did another test, and after another week or so, I was actually in visiting at the time, and we were in an open ward, and the doctor came, pulled the screen round, which, as everybody knows, makes everything completely confidential. Nobody can hear anything. And the doctor started off by saying, I'm really, really sorry. And as soon as those words came out, we knew what was coming next. And he told Colin and myself that the test had come back and they were positive. And the doctor got up and walked out and just left us there. No discussion, no opportunity to ask any questions. I just don't think the doctor knew enough about HIV, and he maybe felt uncomfortable for whatever reason, and it was probably the worst way in which anybody can be told, because there just wasn't any support there. And me and Colin were just sat looking at each other. Within a day or so, he was moved into a side ward, and they were saying it was more for the fact that they wanted to make sure that he didn't come into contact with any other health issues, any bugs or anything like that, rather than him being a risk to anybody else, which I believe that was exactly the reason why, because the QE were really, really supportive. They were a very good team where he on the ward that he was on. But Colin said to me not long after that he said the only way he was coming out of the QE hospital was in a box. He really didn't think that it was going to get any better. And I think it was more to do with the HIV than actually to do with his pancreas and his kidneys, which were actually more of the issue at the time. He decided he wasn't going to go to sleep because he was worried that he wouldn't wake up. So there was huge issues around his mental health, his stamina. He was exhausted, and he was obviously having huge issues with his pancreas and his kidneys. So much so that the hospital decided that they would allow me to stay, and I was able to stay in the room with him, and kind of would go to bed with him, just cuddle him. And eventually one night he did fall asleep, and then I was rudely awoken at about 5 o'clock in the morning, and he was shouting, "I'm alive, I'm alive." And it was quite, in this serious situation, it was quite funny, because I got a shock. I think he got a shock. He didn't think he was going to wake up when he went, and because he was trying not to go to sleep, but actually he did wake up. But that didn't take away from the fact of how serious things were for him. Eventually, the QE felt that they couldn't do any more for him. They didn't have the expertise to deal with what was going on. So there was a three-way conversation between the QE, the old Ward 34 up at the General Hospital, which was where patients were being supported around their HIV status, and the Freeman Hospital around kind of the issues that he was having with his kidneys and his pancreas. Eventually, they decided that the best place for him to go would be the Freeman, because that was the main issue. At the time, they couldn't put him onto treatment for his HIV because the frontline treatment at that time caused huge issues with your kidneys, and they didn't want to make that any worse. So he was taken over by ambulance over to the Freeman. I followed it over there, and kind of while he was in there for the first few days, he'd kind of settled down a bit. Again, the Freeman were absolutely brilliant. They treated me like his next of kin, even though I wasn't, because back in 1998, our relationship wasn't recognised legally. So Colin's real next of kin were his five sisters, who all lived in Bradford. All of them apart from one older than him, and three of them had disowned him when he came out as gay. So he only had his two younger sisters that supported him kind of after he came out. And he didn't want any of his family to know that he was in hospital, mainly to do with because of his HIV status. He just didn't want anybody to know. I mean, I'd told my family, I'd told my mum, I'd told my sister. Colin had told our friends that we had up in Newcastle, but he didn't want his family to know his status. And actually, all of our friends were absolutely brilliant with him, really supportive. My mum was fantastic, my sister was amazed, my sister was a nurse. So she was absolutely fantastic as well. My mum was really worried about me, so I'd actually told her I'd had a HIV test and it had come back negative when I actually hadn't had a test. I just wanted to kind of stop her worrying about me, and we could then focus on Colin. Eventually, because he was still getting worse when he was at the Freeman, I decided I needed to tell somebody in his family, So I sat down with him and I said I was going to tell his youngest sister, Georgina, which I did, and literally the next day she came up to Newcastle. And I'd been staying overnight with him all the while he'd been in the Freeman. And then the day that Georgina came up, she said that I should go home, have a good night's sleep, come back the next day, and kind of at least then I would be refreshed and I would be feeling a bit better. So that's what I did. Came back the next morning. I didn't come back until about 11 o'clock the next morning. And by that time, Colin had actually gone down for some scans that they were doing. And Georgina said all he did all night was ask for us. And Colin never used your first name as a name to call you. He always came up with a nickname for you. So all of his mates had all nicknames, various ones from kind of women's names like Blanche to Cake Maker, because somebody worked in a cake factory. I was Chubby. Because just after I'd met him, I had a massive abscess on me gums, so me cheeks were swollen. So I was Chubby Chops, and once that had healed up and gone away, it was just Chubby after that. And he never called me Mark, it was always Chubby. And Georgina said all he asked for was Chubby all night. Kind of while we were there, and I was hearing this, which at the time when I was hearing it, I just felt so lovely. It was just lovely to hear that he'd just wanted me to be there all night. But that feeling of kind of love and kind of feeling appreciated soon kind of turned really sour, because while Colin had been taken down to have a scan, was probably something to do with the movement. I don't know exactly what had happened, but his pancreas had burst. So he had blood poisoning, and they had to put him onto a life support machine straight away. So that night that I wasn't there, that he asked for me all night. When he asked for me all night, I wasn't there for him. Pulled myself together. So myself and Georgina had some big decisions to make, because we were told by the hospital that there was no hope, he wasn't going to recover, and that at some point we needed to make the decision that the life support machine would be turned off. So we spoke to each other, we spoke to some good friends. The hospital were brilliant. They gave us enough time to make that decision. They didn't rush us in any way. And actually, we had time to get everybody together. So when the time came to turn the machine off, we'd planned it, we'd picked a day, we'd picked a time, and everybody that was close to Colin up in Newcastle was there. And Georgina held one hand, I held the other hand, and the machine was turned off, and he slipped away very peacefully. And I know it sounds really daft, but it was such a wonderful way for him to leave us. And both myself and Georgina felt him grip our hands as the machine was turned off. And I know, thinking about it, and thinking about it kind of rationally, that was just a reaction to the machines being turned off. But both me and Georgina just felt that he was just saying, "Don't worry, I'm all right," and kind of goodbye, I suppose. And that was the start of some major changes to my life. First of all, that was the worst thing that's ever, ever happened. I always thought we were going to be together forever. He was my soulmate, and he was a lovely guy, and he wasn't there anymore. The funeral, kind of planning that, was kind of really difficult, but Georgina was there all of the time, and I decided to get our friend Maureen over from Canada, who we'd been staying with when Colin first became unwell. So I had some really good support with Georgina and Maureen and some other friends, Mark and Gary and other people that kind of lived around us. They were all absolutely brilliant. The Freeman were fantastic because, again, they treated me like the next of kin. And then the rest of Colin's family started to get involved and started to make it very difficult. Remember me saying that three of his five sisters never wanted to know him when he came out. All of a sudden, they knew that was going to be where there was no will, so they knew that as next of kin they were entitled to everything that kind of Colin had kind of helped kind of make during our relationship. So then there was a possibility of losing the house that we'd built together. There we had a holiday home in Florida that they all had their eyes on. We had a reasonable bank account because I was in a well-paid job as a manager of Aldi supermarkets, and that all they saw were pound signs. They fought really hard to take Colin back to Bradford because that's where they felt he should be buried, or they should have the funeral. Colin never wanted to go back to Bradford. His home was in Newcastle, and that's where he wanted to be. So there was big fights about getting that sorted. And at the time when all you needed was things just to be sorted really easily and really quickly. Georgina was absolutely fantastic. And we managed to win that battle. And we had a lovely service up in Newcastle, and Colin worked on the trains. He worked on the North East Main Line, and they had to run a reduced service the day of the funeral because so many people from the train service wanted to come and pay their respects. My place of work were there. They were being really supportive. They gave me time off. They attended the funeral. So Aldi had been really good through this whole process, and on top of what was going on, I had to come out at work as well. So my staff knew that me and Colin were together, but Aldi as an organisation didn't know that I was gay, so I had to come out to them at that time. And again, they were being really supportive around that, which was really good. And then there was a continuous battle over the next few months. Because of no will being made, Colin was only 39, I was only 33, 32 at the time actually, because I hadn't turned 33 by then. They again were just looking at the pound signs, so there was a battle that I really wasn't involved in because Georgina took that on, and eventually after about 3 months she got all of the sisters to agree that they would sign everything back over to me. So thankfully I didn't lose the house that we had. I was able to keep everything that we'd built up over the years being together. So that was one, I suppose, bright spark from a really dark time. And all the while I knew that I was going to have to go for a HIV test myself. And I'd been putting off, knowing that the likelihood is that my result would come back as positive as well. But once everything was sorted, even though I was still grieving, I decided to go for a HIV test in the November of, wait, on the 15th of November 1998. So I went for the test, then, as people know, I went on holiday, because I always go on holiday. If there's something going wrong or if there's something going right, I go on holiday. During that time, they were processing the test, and then when I came back, I went up to the old GUM department at the General Hospital site, and I had a conversation with the team up there, and the result was given in the best possible way. So it went from a really bad way when Colin was diagnosed and when he was told the result, to being really, really good when I was told. And it was by a lovely lady called Rose, who was one of the health advisors. And she just sat me down and she was direct and straight to the point. We've got your results back. They've come back positive. And then, do you have any questions? Is there anything that we can do? And she then organised an appointment with the consultant. I had to go straight onto treatment because the amount of virus in my body was very high, and my immune system, because of that, was really quite badly damaged by then. So I decided that I would go straight onto treatment. I was just going to do exactly what the consultant told me to do. And my consultant said that the likelihood is you're probably going to be really unwell for about 3 months, and not because of the HIV, but because of the actual treatment, because the treatment was so difficult to take. It took a long time for your body to get used to the medication. So then I had a decision to make with Aldi, my employer, as to what to say, because I knew I was going to be off work for somewhere up to 3 months, and it was over the busiest period of the year, which was Christmas. I was going to tell them I had cancer, but actually when I sat down with my area manager, HIV came out my mouth. She was shocked, taken aback. She was really good during the conversation, never picked up on any issues that I had or any concerns that I might have had about the way she reacted. And the next day I went into work, and within an hour there was the area manager was there, the regional manager was there, and a relief manager was there. They suggested I go on garden leave until I was feeling better. And again, it all seemed really supportive. No kind of concerns that they had any ulterior motives. Thought it was quite, you know, I'd never heard of garden leave before. And I lived in a Tyneside flat, so I just had a backyard. So there wasn't going to be much gardening going on. They told me to come back to work and have a meeting with them when I was feeling a bit better. And my consultant was completely right. I have never felt so unwell in all of my life. That Christmas period was absolutely horrendous. And the only way that I can explain how the treatment made me feel, especially the first dose of the day, which was on a morning, was like having the worst hangover you can ever imagine. But happening every day, and getting up on a morning and feeling fine, but then taking these three tablets, which I had to take on an empty stomach, made me feel like I was really unwell with a hangover, kind of feeling nauseous, feeling sick, feeling very, very tired, kind of headaches, dizziness, kind of everything was going on. And I had to take 8 tablets a day, so I had to take 3 in the morning without food, I had to take 2 mid-afternoon, again without food, and then I had to take 3 before I went to bed without food. But the afternoon and the evening dose were much better, because by then I'd had something to eat, so it was just the morning dose that was the real issue. By January, the end of January, I was feeling better, so I went back and had a meeting at work. And at the time, some people might remember Aldi being price memory stores. They didn't have scanners, they didn't have little price tickets on the products. Every member of staff had to remember every price. So they suggested that I take the next month and I relearn all the prices, because as manager you had to know the prices, because you had to test the staff, and come back at the end of February, and then I could take the test. So I did that, went back at the end of February, passed the test, and then they said, well, you've been off work now for 4 months. Working for Aldi was quite a taxing job. It was quite a physical job. And they felt that I probably wasn't fit enough to go back to work straight away. So they suggested I go, I join a gym, and I go regularly, get my fitness levels up, and come back at the end of March, and they would check my gym membership, and I could talk about kind of how that had gone. I did that at the end of March, and then there was another excuse. Can't remember what that excuse was by then, but I was told to come back at the end of April. Then there was another excuse for me not to come back to work. In May, so May the 21st, 1998, I was out, and I met a guy, and he was very nice. In fact, he was more than very nice, and had a one-night stand that has turned out to be a 24-year relationship. So we celebrate our 24th year together on the 21st of May this year. I've been married for 7 years on the 21st of May this year, and he is the most wonderful person you could ever meet. I've been so fortunate having Colin as my first long-term partner, even more fortunate to have Les as my second and hopefully last long-term partner, because God, I really want to be with him for the rest of my life. And he was just absolutely brilliant. He knew I was off work, didn't know why I was off work. I didn't tell him about my HIV status at the time, though I didn't do anything, or we didn't do anything that would have put him at risk. But he knew that I was I was a supermarket manager and I was off work. After about 3 weeks, when I realised that it wasn't just going to be a one-night stand, and at the very least we were going to be kind of good long-term friends, obviously hoping for a lot more than that, I decided it was the time to tell him, and that he needed to know my status, because he needed to be able to make a decision based on all of the facts. I remember exactly where I did it. We were in a car driving along Percy Street in town, and I don't know why, the conversation must have strayed into why I wasn't at work, why he wasn't at work, because he'd just recently moved back up from London. And so I told him while he was driving, which probably wasn't the best idea. But he kind of, the next day or so, he bought me a big bunch of flowers. He got me a card that said he can't believe kind of that I told him such personal information when we'd only just met, and he really appreciated me doing that. He bought me a Eurovision CD, which he's regretted ever since, because I don't think he realised how much of a Eurovision fan I was. He hates Eurovision, but he does kind of sit in the room while I'm watching it most years. He'll just sit there and kind of do other stuff, but he'll be there with us when I watch it. That relationship kind of went from strength to strength. I was still kind of going through that bereavement process, that grieving process for Colin, but Les was really supportive in all of that as well. I was just talking yesterday to some colleagues at work, Les, one of the many things that he did at that time, just to support us going through that process of remembering Colin and grieving for him, was that he'd got a picture of Colin, probably one of the last pictures that was ever taken of him, because it was taken while we were on holiday in Canada, and he'd found a poem online, and he printed the poem off and the picture, and he laminated it. So it's got the poem on the back and the picture on the front, and I carry that round along with a picture of Les in my wallet. And that was just one of the many things that Les has done over the years. And for some reason, he kind of stuck with us and he supported us and kind of eventually I managed to kind of stop getting upset when I thought of Colin. And this probably took nearly 2 years, to be fair. And I started to remember Colin with a smile on my face and just thinking about all the daft things that I used to do and the daft things that I used to say and just remember him in a really positive way. And that's what I've done ever since. As far as Les, he was supporting me and he had concerns about the meetings that I was having with Aldi. And kind of he came along to the May meeting with us and just sat in the car while I was in the meeting because I was still doing these monthly meetings. And at that, when I came out of that meeting, he said to me, "I think something's not right here. There's no reason why they're not letting you back to work, or there is a reason why they're not letting you back to work." He said, "I think you should start recording these meetings." So I went down to the next one in June, and that's when they dropped the bombshell and they said that they'd made a decision that they wouldn't allow me back to work, and I had to look for a job somewhere else. They would pay me on full pay until I found another job, and they said they would give me a glowing reference, but they weren't going to allow me to continue working for Aldi. And that was a huge blow because at the time, really, that was the only thing that was that I was focusing on, the fact that I could go back to work. I'd lost my partner, I'd been diagnosed with HIV, and now it looked like I was going to lose my job as well. And Les suggested that I speak to a solicitor, which I did. They put me in touch with the Terence Higgins Trust. And the Terence Higgins Trust supported me in finding an employment solicitor in Newcastle that I might be able to speak to. So that's what I did. The solicitor took my case on and that turned into a court case. It turned into a case of me versus Aldi. I went for medicals with HIV consultants that Aldi had sent me to. The consultants' reports came back and said there was no reason why I couldn't go back to work and do my job to the same level that I was doing it prior to being diagnosed. And it was in my best interest to go back to work, but Aldi didn't listen to any of that. The case rumbled on between my solicitor and their solicitor, and this rumbled on for another 8 months or so until the April of 2000, and we went for a preliminary hearing down on the quayside, and that was when Aldi realised, after the evidence, after the judge's thoughts, they realised that they were going to lose the court case. So then they looked at settling out of court because they didn't want the bad publicity. And over the next kind of period of a week or a couple of weeks, kind of solicitors were throwing money kind of backwards and forwards. And eventually my solicitor said that I needed to accept, in his view, accept the last amount of money that Aldi were offering, because if it did go to court, even though I was going to win the case, because there was no other court case like this ever in the UK, that there was nothing for the judge to refer back to, and my solicitor felt that I was not going to get anywhere near the amount of money that Aldi were suggesting. So I took my solicitor's advice, which had been taken all the way through the case, and I took the offer that Aldi had put on the table. During the court case, my solicitor had suggested that I go public with my story, and he knew somebody at the Guardian newspaper who would interview me and do a really positive piece. And I was on a bit of a crest of a wave, so I just went along with anything that my solicitor had suggested. So I did an interview with the Guardian newspaper, and then I'd kind of forgotten about it, really. And I didn't know when it was coming out. I didn't know when it was going to be published. I'd gone back to college. I was going to Gateshead College, and I was doing a counselling course there just to gain some more kind of qualifications and experience. And kind of when the Guardian newspaper came out, I got a message from my solicitor while I was at college, and he said that the BBC, that ITV had been in touch and wanted to interview me on the 6 o'clock and 6:30 news, and the Chronicle had been in touch and other local newspapers. So I spent the rest of that day doing interviews, both with newspapers and in TV studios, and the story broke big time. And going onto the scene, onto the gay scene in Newcastle, I was a little bit worried. I mean, I had Les next to me and the rest of my friends, but I was always worried about how people would react to finding out my HIV status. But actually, everybody that came up to me and spoke to me was really, really supportive. They were all absolutely brilliant and just wished me kind of all the best. And obviously kind of that progressed to the situation with the court case and with the settlement that was agreed. And that was based on how long my solicitor felt that it would take me to retrain, get another job doing something else, and getting back to the level of pay that I was on with Aldi. And I joke on with a lot of people that that 7 years that was suggested that it would take me to get up to the level of pay I was on actually ended up taking 20 years, because I got a job initially with Mesmac North East as a community worker and a community worker supporting people with HIV, and I worked there for 8 years. And then from there, I joined the NHS, and I've been doing the job I'm doing now for 15 years this year, and working for the NHS, working for the local authority, you're not on the same amount of money that you're on at somewhere like Aldi when you're managing their supermarkets, but actually your work-life balance is so much better. And doing a job that you absolutely love doing, both for Mesmac and for the NHS, working in the Newcroft Sexual Health Service, have been absolutely brilliant jobs for me, and all the staff have been really, really supportive, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else work-wise. I suppose other little bits and pieces of kind of the story to add in, as I said, that me and Les have been together 24 years this year. He's continued just to be an absolutely amazing partner, always so supportive of anything that I do, whether it's work-related, whether it's kind of personal stuff. He's always been there. My family have always been absolutely brilliant. My mum, my sister, my wider family, aunts, uncles, cousins have always been absolutely fantastic. And my friends have always been absolutely brilliant as well. And over the last 20 odd years, 23 years, I suppose, now working for Mesmac and Newcroft, I've had the opportunity to go into schools, to community groups, to lots of different places, and actually raise awareness of HIV, talk about my experiences of living with HIV, and you hope that helps in some way to either challenge the stigma and discrimination that people face. And I feel myself that I've been really quite fortunate around stigma and discrimination. Really, there's only been my workplace, Aldi, that where there was any stigma or discrimination. But I know a lot of people who have faced a lot more than I have, because they may not have had the support of the friends and the family, and they've had all of that to deal with, along with all the other stuff that that life throws at you. So I do feel, even though I've been through a lot, I've been quite fortunate in a lot of ways. I'm very healthy. I'm a 58-year-old, coming up 58-year-old man. And I think because of my HIV status, I'm probably healthier now than maybe I ever would have been, because I have regular checkups. So if anything else crops up, they get identified and get sorted. My medication over the years have changed hugely. Went for those 8 tablets a day that were really difficult to take, down to 3 tablets a day, which were much easier. Then it went down to 1 tablet a day, which was even easier. And now I'm just on 2 tablets a day. Side effects are minimal. I can do everything that I always had been able to do prior to being diagnosed with HIV. I can still work full time. I can still play sports. I can still socialise. Still eat what I want, though I probably eat too much. And life is good. Life is very good. And I think that's probably a good place to finish.